Welcome back. You're watching Stopwatch with myself, Nastasia Arensa. Tackling your questions in studio tonight is Valdo du Plessis from Nitrogen Fund Managers, rather, and Ian Cruikshanks from the South African Institute of Race Relations. Don't forget to send through those questions to us via SMS to 41392, email stopwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stopwatch. Gentlemen, thank you so much for your time. Let's start off with you, Valdo. Perhaps before we even get into the questions that are coming in for tonight, your take on today's market performance.
Thank you for having me. So, today was quite an interesting day. We saw the market open up quite strong this morning. There was some positive sentiment overnight that the meeting between the US and China has been confirmed for Saturday at the G20. Mm-hmm. But subsequently throughout the day, we saw stocks just drifting lower and lower. I think the top 40 might have ended down about 50 basis points, 65 basis points. Mm-hmm. And it's been quite a recurring theme, actually, of the week, or probably even the last 10 trading days, that liquidity in the market has been as low as I've ever seen it. You know, we've got this big global macro binary event coming out, whether there will be positive trade talks, there may not be trade talks at all. And I don't think anyone is willing to enter the market with any sort of conviction. So it's quite worrying that the liquidity in the direction has been so low, but considering the size of the event coming up on Saturday, it's understandable.
Ian Cruikshanks?
What was interesting, just to go on to what Valdo was saying, was they're just looking at the volume recorded by the JSE. I think it was 14 billion compared to an average day of 20 to 25 billion. Mm. That tells you about the amount of activity. But you know, there is a very important big event happening, mm-hmm. the G20 meeting, and it's all important to see how Mr. Trump, who seems to have the major say in all markets now, has an impact on not just his own market or major markets, but how it drifts down to emerging markets and smaller ones as well. So I think it's the eyes are off the local scene. Mm. The eyes are on the major picture.
The one thing that I mentioned to an analyst who I had a conversation a little bit earlier on was that you had Fox TV interviewed Donald Trump, and that seems to be where he likes to do most of his interviews. But the one thing that he indicated, which can be a little bit alarming depending on which side of the fence you sit on, is that he lambasted the EU because there seems to be this raft of antitrust cases that they're raising against US tech companies. But he also brought in India, saying that for the past who knows how many years, India has had high tariffs against the US, and that needs to stop. So now everybody seems to think that, okay, fine, we've got this China-US trade war going, but he may have his eyes set on other countries as well, either the EU and India. Does that put in a little bit of fear when you, I suppose, if you look at your fear gauge at this point?
To me, it looks like we're heading towards a mini-currency, global currency crisis, in the sense that it's a currency war. Mm-hmm. We've seen the rand and other emerging stocks, currencies mm-hmm. this week strengthening. And that's really off of the back of, as Ian said, not local positive news, but rather that the dollar has been rather weak. Mm-hmm. And so all major trading partners would like to have a weaker currency than their trading partner to drive exports. So, you know, I think a lot of what Trump really says and what happens behind the scene and what we've fed in the media, I think, can have a bit of a dislocation. But certainly, I mean, Trump is advocating for a weaker dollar because it will certainly drive higher exports.
Ian, your take on President Donald Trump having his eyes set on other countries?
Well, I think, you know, he's driven by the fact he wants to bring business to America. He wants to bring American associated interests back to America. And come what may, he'll find a way of doing it. Many people wrote him off as inconsequential, but I think that's a mistake. He said he wanted a weaker dollar, and it's happened. He wanted lower interest rates, and despite the intentions of the Fed at the beginning of the year, they look like there's going to be a rate cut quite soon. He wants strong markets, and he's got it. I think that really he's the only game in town right now. One has to watch him.
All right. So we got the first question for tonight coming in, and it is with regards to Mondi. And Fatai says, can you please ask the panel their view on Mondi and BTI? Let's do Mondi.
Okay, Mondi first of all.
Yeah.
First class, well-run organization. They've got their strategies right. Just compare it to SAPI. Phew, that's the high and the mighty against the washed out just about. So, no, well-run, well-managed, good strategy. They know where they're going and they concentrate on their strengths. And I think that that, to me, is the most important factor in their outlook. The share price is not looking terribly exciting right now, but I just think that around that 30,000 level, maybe that's interesting to have a look at.
Mondi,
your view? So I agree with Ian and what he said. It's a well-capitalized business. I like it because it's a rand hedge, which I think is well needed in South African stockholders' portfolios. But also I think they've got fundamental underpins. You know, online classifieds, online food delivery, these are major macro trends. And all of that is being delivered in packaging. And if that packaging is cardboard or paper-based, then, you know, they stand to have a natural demand.
Okay.
And may I just add something there? Just looking at the graph of that, it looks very much like we've got a reverse head and shoulders there. And that would be a very nice base if it extends a little bit over on the right-hand side. And it could be a reason or a support for gathering some at around that level.
Speaking of gathering, Tyler says that he's scared that Altron does not pull back and he's getting the fear of missing out, or as the cool kids call it, FOMO. And he wants to know, do you think a pullback is necessary? Valuation doesn't look too demanding.
May I just make a comment there?
Yes.
I spoke to the chairman a little while ago. We were colleagues quite a long time ago. And he really introduced me to the strategy which they've adopted. Mm-hmm. I mean, since the family no longer take an active investment in management, the Fenter family, that is, they've thrown out, literally, everything that wasn't likely to be profitable or going to be profitable in the foreseeable future. Anything that didn't fit in to the strategy that they decided onto their strengths. They're concentrating on strengths. Never mind the weaknesses. We'll cut them out and concentrate on where we can get ahead. Mm-hmm. And I think the new CEO has performed extraordinarily well. And I think that is reflected in the share price. Do you buy it now when it's had one heck of a good run? I was very interested when it was about 1600, but I don't think we're going to see it again.
Yeah.
And this is the problem. It's one of those shares that needs to be added at times if it does pull back and should be in any well-balanced long-term portfolio.
Is Altron one you've ever looked at, Walter?
So Altron is one we also like very much. Exactly as Ian has said, very well-run business. It's very liked amongst institutional investors. It's very tightly held. It's had excellent results. They keep delivering on their results. Yes. And so naturally you see what you see there. You see in looking amongst its peers, it's head and shoulders above the rest. So will there be a pullback? It's hard to say, but if it does drop, yes, exactly. I would add it to my portfolio.
All right.
It should be on every fund manager's board shopping list.
Okay, cool. Ian, this one's actually for you. The question is, what does Ian think should be the best level for the rand-dollar exchange rate over the next year?
When you said it's a question for me, I knew here comes trouble. The best level for the rand-dollar exchange rate. No, one can't predict it in advance. Mm-hmm. I think that there's no doubt the economy is under severe threat, and in that circumstance, the exchange rate reflects the view of the economy. We're seeing an outflow of foreign investors that will, in due course, have an effect on the currency. If it has, I think that the recovery we've seen recently is likely to be short term. Long term, we've got a negative growth rate. That's the wrong thing to say. The economy is shrinking. Mm. We're not producing jobs. We're destroying jobs. We're not creating consumer demand. We're doing the opposite. We have no fixed capital investment. Business confidence and consumer confidence are low. Just look at things like vehicle sales. All these tell you there's a shrinkage in so many areas. That will be reflected by the currency in due course, and I would not be surprised, and I won't give specific levels, but if over the space of the next year or longer, we see it at around these levels or even weaker. There's no hurry to buy the rand. I would prefer to stay out.
And just as a side, you were talking a little bit earlier off air that you had a look at the Saab quarterly bulletin. What does that basically tell us in relation to the economy at this point?
Well, it's a bit difficult. It's a book about the six, so one can only... for instance, what struck me, gross fixed capital formation. of which two-thirds is made up by the private sector, is negative, I think by 9 or 10%. What does that say? There's no business confidence, there's no business growth, so there's no stimulation of activity. Certainly there's no job creation. If there's no job creation, there's no improvement in consumer behavior, consumer spending. Really, it says to me that I remain convinced that the economy may not shrink, but it's in a no-go area for the foreseeable future. GDP outlook, maybe -1 to +1 for a couple of years.
All right. Well, perhaps you want to take this one. Sharon wants to know your view on the construction and property stocks.
Okay, so construction, I think Ian just summed it up right there. There's no fixed capital investment. Yeah. So he's answered that one for the viewer. Property stocks, they've been hit hard, and understandably so. The office sector is under a lot of pressure, and it makes sense. You know, if there are no new businesses, the business or the private sector is not growing, people are not taking up new space. And so what you saw is you saw an influx of supply, which meant that Ian could go into the building next door, move into a newer building with better ventilation, better parking, better sort of just amenities, and he's paying less, so why wouldn't you move? And so this is what you've seen. You've seen the sort of price war going on between office tenants, landlords, retail landlords, similarly industrial. So what do I think of property going forward? I think if the economy isn't able to pick itself up off the floor, these stocks are really going to struggle to take off from here. But is there much downside from here? I don't see it. I mean, a lot of good quality names. I mean, Growthpoint is a phenomenal operation. It's really, really well run. And it's yielding almost 9.5%, which looks pretty attractive. So, yes, you're going to get some income. You're going to get a yield pickup. Will you get capital growth? I'm not so sure.
But I suppose as well, the office space is changing a little bit because now you have WeWork that's, you know, introducing the whole co-working space. They opened in, a space for people to work in Rosebank, and there's another one in Cape Town that's going to pop up pretty soon. Does that change things as well and make it even more competitive for the property guys who are trying to perhaps even attract entrepreneurs and those who are in the small business sector?
I may comment there.
Yes.
It's not introducing new tenants. It's just putting existing tenants into a smaller space, effectively, because they're not utilizing, getting maximum usage out of their properties. And I spoke to CEO, one of the big property-owning companies, and I said, what about all these massive buildings? I mean, they're hugely impressive and really, from an architectural point of view, magnificent. So you'd find them as monuments to the ego of the CEO in some case. But really, these palaces, which now you can define as, we no longer have five-star, we have six-star or whatever it is. So who's going to fill the five-star buildings where the new developers are coming out of? Mm-hmm. And he said they're going to be empty for some time. They're already offering a year's free rental if a prospective tenant will offer a three-year, will sign a three-year contract. What does that say to the returns?
Yeah, so just on that, Sandton is believed to be about 15% vacancy rate at this stage. My advice to the viewers would be that property stocks are big users of debt. Mm-hmm. Look out for the loan-to-value ratio. If the loan-to-value ratio goes above anything north of 40%, it's something to be careful of. You know, all these companies will need to refinance the debt in upcoming years. Mm-hmm. And if the local economy is not strong enough, they'll be taking some pain there.
Right. So we're going to take a quick break. And speaking of fancy buildings, one company has a really nice fancy building. And there was a news report that the rental there was 23 million rand a month. I think you know which company I'm talking about. There is a question about it. So we'll come to that. Keep sending through your questions to us via SMS to 41392 or email stockwatch@businessdaytv.co.za. Welcome back. Taking a look at the markets picture, starting off with things in the U.S. It's green across the board with the Nasdaq up 0.7%. And the S&P, which opened the markets a little bit earlier on, firmer, tracking some of those gains for the week. Over in Europe, it's a mixed picture with the German DAX up nearly 0.25%. Still with me in studio is Waldo du Plessis from Nitrogen Fund Managers and Ian Cruikshanks, who's from the South African Institute of Race Relations. So just before we went to an ad break, I mentioned that we were going to talk about one company that has a really fancy building, and that company is Discovery. And the reason I mentioned that is because we already have a viewer who's asked a question on it, but there's also an article on the Bloomberg site that says a bank built in 1.5 million hours takes on the 108-year-old rivals, and that's none other than Discovery Bank. Your view on Discovery as a whole?
So today they came out with an announcement that from Monday they're going to open up the bank to the public. Mm-hmm. They initially asked 1,000 of their current clients to pilot the bank.
Yeah.
It took much longer to get to this stage than what the market was expecting, which to me reads that there may have been some hiccups.
Mm-hmm.
They state that it took 150 man hours of, you would assume, coding to get it to where it is. It's an innovative product. My concern is quite simple. They say they're going to add 1,000 users a day up until the end of August. Mm. They need 500,000 to 600,000 users for the bank to break even, which by my rough math is 18 months to 2 years.
Mm.
The issue with that is that Discovery hasn't really been creating much free cash flow over the last few years. You know, they've had this big project of the bank on the side. Investors have been very patient have rightly given the management team the ability to deliver. Now we're at the state where they actually have a bank is very capital intensive. And so now they've got a very capital-intensive asset that needs to grow in what is quite an overbanked sector in South Africa. So will the bank deliver? I'm sure it will be innovative. I know there will be all sorts of interesting rewards programs. Will it deliver for the company on the bottom line? Let's wait and see.
Ian?
Yes, I have a personal interest. A very good friend of mine is in the management. I can't say exactly where. In the treasury area. They are very well managed.
Mm.
And I think from that point of view, there's nothing more important than the source and application of funding of a bank. Yes, they're not they don't have excess capital, but I think that their reputation will probably pull the sort of deposits that they want. They're not going for the big corporate accounts, certainly not in the foreseeable future. Mm. They want Mr. Man in the Street to come and put his salary in and to take it out for his monthly purchases. I have a great regard for the directorate and the management of the group as a whole.
Right.
So I think that is why it's probably a safe bet, although progress may be difficult and slow.
All right. So we've got two questions from Leon. So we'll deal with the first question. And he says, quality locally listed British property companies, Hammerson, Capital & Counties, etc., are trading at low prices, apparently because of Brexit worries. Are they good buys on a 2 to 3 year view?
So I've spent a lot of time looking at these companies. He's specifically referring to the property companies, which are dual listed. So, I mean, Capital & Counties, the share price has more than halved. I mean, it's really taken a hit. Hammerson itself has also taken a huge hit. And it's quite simple. Hammerson owns retail centres in the UK. The UK is the most online shopped economy in the world. Mm. Brick and mortar retail is struggling. There's no doubt about it. Some of the malls they have are... They may run to become redundant. I mean, they're just not servicing what the public is after. Capital & Counties, and then, of course, you've had Brexit on top of it. Capital & Counties, it's twofold. They undertook a huge development at Earl's Court. Brexit hit. The demand is slow. They're having to do a certain amount of public housing per private unit, which has really put a sort of a stick in the progress. And so investors are actually, you know, the 5-year plan has become a 10-year plan. And so in this economy, people have sort of started to vote with their feet.
Do you have a view on any of those companies, the dual listed property?
I think that it was very well summed up.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that it's an area to stay away from. Not that there's going to be a crash in the property sector, but there's no growth. It's oversupplied and it's underutilized.
All right.
I will say Capital & Counties own Covent Garden, which is one of probably the most premier retail assets in the world. Mm. And then they have this property development foray of mixed use, mainly around residential, which is a little bit of a disaster. And you can see by management teams making sort of, you know, not the right decision, mm-hmm. if you want to call it that, the effect it can have. You've got the best, one of the best assets in the world, and some not so good assets, and generally people just don't like it.
Okay. So the second part to Leon's question has to do with Sasol. Is it a good buy on a medium-term view? Sasol.
Sasol, I think, you know, long-term, we need the oil. Hmm? We need the chemical products. We need a lot of the other products. Will they be able to produce, especially on the American expansion that they've had, at the right price, at the right time? I put a question mark about it, and I think that's been shown in the share price. Mm-hmm. You know, it's always promises. It's only another billion rand, no, billion dollars they talk about, and the capex that they need. And then it's another, and I just feel that the it sounds a bit too much like Eskom to me.
You know. Walter?
Well, won't be as harsh. I'll say no. I just... I think it's, again, Ian's touched on a lot of the points. It's just a lot of promises that are seemingly not delivered on over many years. To me, there's simpler businesses to value to have a look at that offer some nice upside.
Okay. Agreed. So the next question is on MTN. Is it worth buying more at this stage? MTN. Let Ian take this.
Pity, I should have looked the other way. I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think they're having ongoing problems, especially in Nigeria. They're having ongoing problems wherever they're operating, as the domicile countries look at them and look at them as a cash cow type situation. Mm. And I think that I can't see the terrific growth we've seen over the last decade is unlikely to be repeated. That's my view of it.
MTN?
I'm skeptical of these cross-currency conversions that are going on. You know, you've seen South African companies own things in Zimbabwe. The official Zimbabwe rate was 1-1 on the US dollar, if you can believe it, for the last 2 years. Then they developed the RTGS, which is the real-time gross settlement. And then about a few days ago, they've relaunched the Zimbabwe dollar. Mm. So MTN has a lot of... It's got a mixed bag of earnings, and my concern is really Nigeria and that, converting that right. revenue back to rands.
Okay, so the next question, I think we're going to have a property theme throughout the show, has to do with Into. Is it a buy at current levels after the huge fall?
I think we touched on this one earlier. Into also retail, UK, brick and mortar. They really need to think about some stuff. Some of their bond issuance in the past are having to come up for renewal. We'll have to see where that debt's refinanced. Mm.
That's a good point, actually. You know, what is going to happen when property sector debt has to be rolled over? It's even if interest rates do come down, their debt will be harder to access and may not be at such friendly rates as they see now.
Okay, so this one's a retail question, and it has to do with Massmart, which we haven't had a question on Massmart in quite some time. And the question is, do you believe that the new guy will be able to get a grip on the situation here?
The new guy get a grip on the situation. I think you have to look at the fundamentals, and the South African consumer is stretched, you know, and that's not going to change. You know, so you've seen it. I mean, you've seen the new dawn arriving, mm-hmm. whether it's South African government, whether it's Eskom, whether it's some of the private companies. It's not that easy. It's not that easy for someone to come in and wave their wand and suddenly people are going to start buying mm-hmm. the products. At the end of the day, you know, Massmart has gone on. They've been partly successful in renewing leases at better rates, which is obviously a large part of their business. They've been able to control costs somewhat. But if the top line is not growing, there's only so much you can do.
Massmart, do you have the same concerns that he
has? You know, as far as the retail sector is concerned, once again, the consumers are stretched. Mm. Their household expenses are unmanageably high. and it's not going to get any easier. I think that the cost of living is putting severe constraints on consumer spending. Doesn't seem anything to go for the time being, in an area which is probably oversupplied.
Right. Okay, let's stick with you and get to your stock pick.
I would stick with cash.
With cash.
I think, you know, I feel comfort in getting a pretty good return at the moment and knowing in a year or 2 years' time I can get it all back, and the risk is, even with one of the new banks, is not high.
It's actually funny. I've known Ian for about 6 years and he's always gone with cash.
No, not always. Don't worry, there will be a bull market, and we're going to have all that cash to put into the market at very attractive levels, and then you won't stop me from being a bull.
All right. Waldo?
Well, the 6 years, Ian must have outperformed quite a few of us. So I'm going to go with Old Mutual. It's obviously very exposed to the South African economy. They've had a bit of a storm in a teacup, is the way I see it, with the CEO. Mm. Being pinged for some conflicts of interest. It seems that they've followed the due process, and frankly I think some of the large institutional managers agree that maybe they can find, you know, someone to drive the ship a little bit harder, and so the stock has been hit. It looks like, you know, it was deconstructed, if you would, not too long ago, and so the pure insurance business is trading about a 30% discount to its peers, and so yeah, I think it looks like a buy at these levels.
All right, well, let's leave it there. Thank you so much for your time, gentlemen.
Thank you.
That's my guests, Waldo du Plessis from Nitrogen Fund Managers and Ian Cruickshanks from the South African Institute of Race Relations. We take more of your stock related questions tomorrow. Have a good evening. 6 years It's actually funny. I've known Ian for about 6 years, and he's always gone with cash.
No, not always. Don't worry, there will be a bull market, and we're going to have all that cash to put into the market at very attractive levels, and then you won't stop me from being a bull.
All right. Waldo?
Well, the 6 years, Ian must have outperformed quite a few of us. So I'm going to go with Old Mutual. It's obviously very exposed to the South African economy. They've had a bit of a storm in a teacup, is the way I see it, with the CEO. Mm. Being pinged for some conflicts of interest. It seems that they've followed the due process, and frankly I think some of the large institutional managers agree that maybe they can find, you know, someone to drive the ship a little bit harder, and so the stock has been hit. It looks like, you know, it was deconstructed, if you would, not too long ago, and so the pure insurance business is trading about a 30% discount to its peers, so yeah, I think it looks like a buy at these levels.
All right, well, let's leave it there. Thank you so much for your time, gentlemen.
Thank you.
That's my guests, Waldo du Plessis from Nitrogen Fund Managers and Ian Cruickshanks from the South African Institute of Race Relations. We take more of your stock related questions tomorrow. Have a good evening.